You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hey, you're listening to Adulting with Horses, the best place to be if you can't be at the barn. We are your co-hosts and equine authors, Heather Wallace and Natalie Keller Reinert. As crazy horse girls, we don't take ourselves too seriously in the saddle or out. We celebrate the things that make us different. Join us as we talk about horses and pop culture and get a little weird in a fun way. Thank you for being a little weird with us. Well, welcome to a special episode of Adulting with Horses podcast. This one is special, Natalie, because we're going to talk about Buy a Horse Book Day, which was created by Trafalgar Square Books and Heelsdown Media, and we have a special guest with us.
Is it me? Am I the special guest?
You're never special. Oh, but you're never a guest. Special. I think you're part of this podcast.
I don't actually know what's happening. My soul has left my body. Yes. Hi, I'm Natalie, and
welcome, Natalie.
Thank you. I was watching numbers to make sure my computer wasn't being idiotic, but it's not, and that's great. We do have our very special horse book friend, Susan Friedland.
Hello, hello.
She's
you
here.
Are special, Natalie.
No. Remember, we keep her humble here.
Oh, they have to. Yeah, I have to be dragged down here. This is where I come to be. You know,
okay,
have
you're
my
sort
feet
of
cut
awful.
Out from under me because
I have a
little bit of a problem.
It's not a little problem. It's a big problem, and it's
my
a gorgeous
big
one.
Head.
But yeah. Well, Susan, you've been on the podcast before. You know what we're like.
I have, and I will say, I just got back. I spent a little bit of time with Natalie in between her signing all the thousands of copies of her book last weekend at the Kentucky 3-Day. And I don't know if I told you this, Natalie, but like, well, I did witness a lot of people go up to her, and they were like, "Oh, I'm such a fangirl right now. I've read all your books," and yeah, so that was fun. But
she's too famous. It's annoying.
Yeah. Well, the
Insert
thing is,
jealous
you know me. I court
here.
Fame.
No, it's good. It's nice to see because, you know, one of the things Natalie and I talk about is how at more and more of these big events, you see bookstores and author signings where in previous years, that was never really a thing. So it's been awesome to see kind of that progression. And Natalie does deserve, with her 50 million books, to be recognized.
Absolutely, because that didn't happen overnight.
No, it took two nights.
What, 10 years? 10 years of hard,
yeah, it was
hard work.
Been 12 years. And last night, my husband looked on his phone. He said, "I have the original file of Ambition that you sent to me before you published it. And I'm going to look it up." And he looked in his email and he found it. And he said, "This is dated 2011.
Wow. Oh my God.
It is 2024. So that book, the original file of it, is 12 years old. And that's all the mathing I can do. But yeah, everything on that table. That wasn't my first book. That was my third, I think. So yeah, it's hard. I told, you know, we work with Taberton Equine Books, who are the greatest, you know, in the world. And I was like, we have to stop bringing all of my series because people get overwhelmed. Like, it's good online to have that many books. But in person, it's terrifying to people. And
they're
I have
like,
to
how do I
through
choose
it.
Where to start?
Yeah. Whereas other, like when I was a kid, you know, there was Thoroughbred and there was Saddle Club, and those were the big horse book series. And A,
yeah,
they were for
really
children.
Into the Saddle Club.
Right. And it was one series of like 100 books. And you could pick it up anywhere. You could start with book 86 and somebody's going to go on a trail ride. Somebody's going to cry and somebody is failing a test. And that is the plot line of every book.
But you know what? The formula works because people kept coming back. Like, there was 100 books.
That's true. But people love horse books. Like, so many people still say to me, oh my God, we need more horse books. And it's like, we are working on it.
Absolutely.
We are leading this revolution. We are telling people how to do it. They are asking us questions and we are shoving them out there like, publish your book. Let's go. So.
You know, to that point, I think it's interesting too, and I've been guilty of this, Natalie, so please forgive me, like where I have an idea, and I'm not a fiction writer, if you're not familiar with my work. And so when I think of fiction, well, and now you are, Heather, but when I've been with, you know, in Natalie's presence, and then I think of something like, oh, Natalie, you should do a book on that, because that's not in my realm of expertise. Then on the other hand, I have people tell me, oh, you should write a book about XYZ. So, there are not enough horse books out there for the audience of people in the world who love horses.
Yeah. And the nice thing about, I always say too, like, because we're part of an author community, right? Like, and we're a niche community. We write about horses. We're horse people. And the cool thing is it's not a competition, because people don't just read one book. They want to read all of the books. Right. And so, I'll take Natalie's leftovers. That's fine.
I think people were inherently competitive to a certain extent. We get that from our horses, if not from ourselves. And it is really difficult sometimes to know that perennial publishing advice is true, that you are not competing with other titles. I mean, I get competitive every time I see a new author hit the scene. I'm like, oh, well, who do we have here?
It's because you're like the OG kind of, you know, in our generation. You're like, you're Natalie Kellerreiner.
Yeah, but it's also just that I'm a terrible person. So,
well, that's that really, I didn't want to say it on air, but
that's,
you know,
okay. No, everyone knows. Everyone knows that I'm bad. But, you know, I am very good at pushing down all of the bad parts of me and only showing the good. That's why I have terrible characters.
Until I come in and I poke you. But. Well, no, it's isn't it great where you can take something you're really pissed off about and you could put it into a character and have them killed off or whatnot? Like, oh, that's a terrible tragedy. That's the benefit.
You're loving fiction life, aren't you?
I'm really loving fiction life. I will have to say, because, you know, Susan, you're a nonfiction writer. Natalie, you're fiction. I've done both actively. And they're very different beasts. They're incredibly different beasts when it comes to writing and then also sales, but I love them both. I don't think I could ever do one versus the other. Although, you know, I do want to create my fiction empire because I got a whole list of stories ready to come out of me. So
that's really exciting.
Yeah, it'll be fun. You know,
we'll empires see. Are good. Susan has a Chicatique pony empire. All you have to do is stand in your presence for 5 minutes and watch 15 people walk up with all their Chicatique pony stories. And then you guys are off. You're not just talking. You're making plans. You're summering in their homes. You're visiting them for Christmas.
For as long as I've been a part of the Thoroughbred, you know, off-track Thoroughbred community, I have yet to be invited to the home. But the Chicatique pony people are quite a different breed, pun intended, and it's really refreshing. And I don't even know, like, just to give you an example,
you created this, like, you're part of this small community now because there are people who all love the same thing you do. And I remember you were going down to Chicatique for the first time in the summer and you're like, oh, Heather, are you gonna come? And I'm like, I want to. And now you're actually part of the community and I'm like, man, I should have gone.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Well, there's still time. I'm going to be back there this Pony Penny week. And actually, I am going to be doing a little talk about my Marguerite Henry research at the Middleburg Library on Misty's birthday, which is July 20th.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And then from there, I'll go to Chincoteague Island. And my sister is going to come. And I have a niece who's also horse crazy. And I think she and her husband are going to join us. And so
you can make it a big family affair.
Yes, it will be. It'll be really fun. And it feels like there's some kind of instant connection with, like, when we were at Equine Affair Ohio, I met Kelly Cosby. She takes gorgeous photos. There's one behind me right there, of the Chincoteague ponies. And I just kind of felt like I knew her when we, and I probably talked to her for a total of 10 minutes during that event, but we've emailed back and forth and I'm going to feature her on my blog. And she gave me some tips for watching the pony swim in July. So it's a neat community.
That's really, really cool. That's really cool. I think that's maybe the benefit of nonfiction, right? Because it's, you're not only are you doing research, but you're touching people and things that they've experienced or they have very fond memories of. And so where fiction can kind of give people a view into what another life is like, nonfiction mm-hmm. is such like a real kind of authentic experience that people might see from a different perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, I think about Marguerite Henry, because when I started this, I thought that her books were all nonfiction. And then as I got into it, it's like, oh, they technically are fiction based on true things. So I guess like historical mm-hmm. fiction. Mm-hmm. And so that she definitely took some artistic license with her stories, but they were mostly based on truth.
But, well, so do you think you would do something like that? Like you would kind of venture a little bit into a historical fiction in the future?
That sounds hard. That sounds hard. Because with writing nonfiction, it's like I'm just putting down the things that I know are true or happen or that someone said, you know, that here's this quote or what they experienced. But then to try to invent something, I don't know. But I read an interesting book, and I don't read much fiction at all, but someone recommended this book to me because while I was writing Marguerite, Misty, and Me, and it's called The Personal Librarian. And it's about this woman who, well, I don't want to give it all away, but anyway, she was an unlikely person to be the librarian of, I think it was the Carnegie. And Natalie would know because she, or both of you, because you've got New York ties, there's some archival library from some very old
like
money.
Like the one in Bryant Park? Or
I can't think of the name of it now. I didn't.
Oh, the Morgan?
Yes.
On the Upper East Side?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So this person existed in history. And so some of the things were, but the author, you know, wove this tale of her life and just the intrigue and that. And so it was really cool, but it seems kind of hard. So I don't know. Maybe I will one day.
Well, life is a challenge, right? I mean, maybe you never know. Don't sell yourself short. Right. Well, and then you're kind of like, so for example, I never thought I would quote, I'm not really ghostwrite, but you know, I have this new book coming out, which mm-hmm. are Flogger Score books this summer. And that was a project I never had in mind that I was going to do, which is write someone else's story. Natalie's showing it on the screen. Beyond Expectations with Sid Collier. And, you know, she and I met at one of the big horse events, expos, and we were introduced for our friends. And, she's like, oh, I read Confessions of a Timid Writer. I love your voice. I want you to write my story. And I was like, ha, 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 sure. And yeah, needless to say, Trafalgar Square picked it up. But to set foot, and I was writing as her, like I was listening to her story and then writing as Sydney, trying to put myself in her shoes. It was mind-boggling. Like I've never done anything more challenging. I'm incredibly proud of it, but like, I don't know if I could ever do that again because that's just, it was a lot. Like it was hard. It was really hard. Yeah. And then you hope you just do the person justice. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So every time she would read a chapter and she'd cry, I'd be like, nailed it.
That's actually going back to Marguerite Henry. That's how she would gauge whether or not her stories were good. When she was, had completed a first draft, she would give it to her husband and she would kind of spy on him as he read it. And so if he looked a little confused, then she'd kind of peer over his shoulder and know, okay, that's a section I need to go back to. And he laughed, you know, she thought nailed it, right? And then if mm-hmm. he cried, then she knew that she had hit the right tone with that. That's such a charming story.
Oh, that's fun. I can't imagine if I tried to read over my husband's shoulder, first of all, he's more of an audiobook guy, so I don't see that happening. But second of all, he would be like, get out of here or not reading it.
Scram.
Oh,
My husband read all of my first books. For the first like 10 books I published, my husband read and made notes on all of those books. He edited for me. And it took half of those books before I could be in the same apartment while he was reading. Before I could open the file with the comments on it and not go, oh, you know, just the horror, the sick feeling in the stomach. And I finally got over it. But I don't think I ever watched him read.
Yeah. Well, I know your husband has a background, well, that you guys met at a bookstore. So I assume he also loves to read in that. But I didn't realize that he played that role. And when you were getting his feedback and that, I mean, did you feel like most of it were really, you know, good things that helped you tailor your book?
Definitely.
Better.
Yeah. Okay. We read,
which is probably very much more annoying.
We have the same taste in books.
Okay.
So, to a certain extent, like I read a lot more of those like historical fiction women novels, like the librarian one. Like I read a lot of books about librarians during World War II, like more than you can imagine. It's a very large genre.
That's a niche. That is a niche.
That sounds interesting.
It's like a whole genre, library.
What?
World War II. I think I've read like 4 this year. I'm not kidding.
You have a type. Are you in a dark place? Are you feeling
okay? They have really
okay?
pretty covers. I get really attracted to the cover. I get sucked in. We have really similar when it comes to like literary fiction. We both like the same like big authors like Mike Chabon and Jonathan Coe and people like that. So I think he knows where my influences lie. And so he kind of follows that train. But he doesn't really do it anymore because my books have gotten... Like, I'm very comfortable in my voice now, and I know exactly what I'm trying to do. So now I have, alpha readers who tell me how the story is coming along, and then I just kind of work off of their feedback and go from there. So, but it takes a lot of books to get to that point. So when I start doing historical, like, nonfiction, like Susan, which anything is possible, maybe I'll have to have her read it. I'll make you.
That would be
come
fun.
To your house. I'm going to go ride your horse and you're going to read my book. And that's how it's going to be.
Oh, that would be great.
That would be a cute little switcheroo.
He's getting, you will like him because you like thoroughbreds. So
I do like thoroughbreds. So
it seems like a very even Steven kind of crossover.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm just going to ride night. That's fine.
I'm feeling done a little writing. Left out here.
Oh no, you're invited too.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you would be there. Obviously, you're like the master of ceremonies. You're in charge of everything.
You can do, okay, because yeah,
I could be like the
you're
the
already the crossover.
Making everybody
you already
laugh. You already
do both.
I am the crossover.
Susan and I are like specialists.
Yeah. Well, okay. We will borrow a horse for you, Heather. And Knight always needs body work, so maybe
there
you can.
Go.
I do so much. It's so ridiculous. It takes me forever to tack up because it's not just that I try to be very meticulous with my grooming, which you wouldn't know by the fact that he had some little mud dreadlocks in his mane yesterday, but he's so sensitive about his mane. This is a total tangent. I can't get all the little mud things out of the mane. So it's like, okay, just if I'm going to leave just a few, cause I had a lesson, I didn't want to be late.
I don't know if you should be admitting this because Natalie is like the mane police, because recently she gave me shit about Ferris's mane and I had to go public and show the before and after because
I said,
my poor little pony.
I apologized and I said, I hope this isn't offensive, but I think that you should try brushing his mane. Because a lot
and
of
I
people
said,
don't
do.
Brush manes.
Really?
And I think that it's messy. And so I thought maybe you were just...
How do you not brush a mane? That's like not brushing your own hair.
Honestly, I'm pretty sure my first, like where I learned to ride, we didn't brush manes.
Oh, really?
Isn't that weird?
It is a little
just
weird.
Like,
I've never heard
weird.
Of that. I've heard of tails. Because you don't want to break off.
Yeah, not a brush tail. Yeah. No, it's a brush tail.
A mane?
Yeah.
See, my pet peeve is like shavings in the tail. Or on the belly, like
oh,
just
so gross.
Yeah, like get it off. You know, there's no reason for that. You shouldn't be talking about a horse with shavings on it. So I'm just saying, Susan, be careful because Natalie is like very judgmental about personal appearance of ponies.
Okay.
I just thought he would look nicer. I was trying to help. I don't know how to help because I have no, like, you know, normal social skills. Raised in a cult. True. Whole other
he's
story.
He's very feral and he's
and
happily
I just
feral.
Wanted to help.
Well, to be fair, I don't really get offended, but I like to make a big deal because then it makes Natalie feel a little bit bad when I post a reel of, you know, me spending all this time brushing it and it looks just the fucking same.
No,
she
really?
Did that. She did that.
Do you need to
she
roach
tried to make
mane,
me feel bad.
So I am roaching his mane for the summer, okay. But he's got very coarse, a very coarse mane, and he also has a curly mane, and he, if you ever braid it, he rubs out the braids. So he's got like three different layers of mane, and it is cleaned regularly. But yeah, he will be getting roached for the summer, especially because now he's right now he's semi-retired because of some illness. So he's
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry to hear that.
It was because he was offended by Natalie and he's decided to take to his bed. Like a hysterical woman.
In the corner.
Well, you know, I have
it happened right worse.
So if anybody wants to see a horrid disaster mane, I actually have one in my paddock. I have
that's true.
I
put you really shouldn't be judging other people.
I wasn't judging at all ever. I was never judging. But I want to put a request out there to all miniature horse breeders. Can you like breed thinner manes, like normal manes? Because there's like six horse manes on this one miniature horse and it looks ridiculous. And he breaks my clippers every time.
Oh.
They're clip masters. I should be able to share a sheep with these things. This pony's mane destroys them. Please stop doing this to us. I have to cough. This upset me so much I had to cough.
She's so verklempt.
I love it, coughing.
Talk amongst yourselves.
I can't find the mute.
Oh my God.
Let me talk. This is Mane Talk with Heather, Natalie, and Susan.
All right. Well, when it comes to me, well, so I have a question because I can't pull Knight's mane, and so I don't want to do the scissor thing that looks lame and like a
it looks like someone's child.
Yeah,
like
it's
kind of
stupid.
Bear.
Yeah, but I'm gonna have someone
have
at the barn,
a
younger.
That's what I do.
Who is in
have a main
do it. But that,
get the knife.
That doesn't work. That doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
I'm not skilled, so what I do is I hand
it works exactly.
I hand
like
my trainer $20 and I said, here's my pony. That's what I do.
I can't
just use the comb.
Like, I can barely...
It doesn't pull it. It cuts it. You gotta
I know, but
I'll make
I don't
a video.
Think
no, I know. I have the comb. I have it. But
yeah.
But why do that when my trainer can make it look really nice? And do it within 30 seconds.
We don't have trainers. And we're also really good grooms. But I guess that's not you. So.
But no, how clearly. Long did you guys say a thoroughbred? You know, I'm riding. I only have a dressage saddle that fits him. So I guess I'm a or as Natalie says, dressage. So I'm a dressage rider now. How long should his mane be? This is what I don't know the answer to.
Are you showing? Like, are you competing?
Maybe. I don't know. Don't put it past me.
Because if you're competing, that's different. If you're not competing, you could have it as long as you want it.
Well, I don't like it long. I think it looks messy.
So I prefer
you should
it
shorten
to
it to
like,
where it looks good.
Yeah, like I like to do it just below the crest of their neck, so it's like, you know, it's not like a super shorty kind of like a light bang situation. I like it to be like, you know, framing the neck.
I do got a hand. This is my hand.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I do about a hand. Yeah. Okay. The hunters used to say four fingers, but everybody's, look, we've got different size hands. The hunters used to say four fingers, but I include the thumb. I do the whole hand. And I think they just, it makes the neck look longer. It accentuates the curve of the neck. I think it's very tidy. We talked about this last episode, actually, about how much we like different lengths of manes.
Well,
because I started apparently harassing her about Ferris, so it came up.
Oh, well, I don't love a short mane. Like, I don't particularly love a short. I like it roached, or I like it, you know, a nice longer pull or long. Like, Delight's mane is like Baroque horse feral at this point. Like, everyone.
And he's a thoroughbred, right?
Yeah. And they don't think he's a thoroughbred. Everyone keeps asking me if he's like some kind of standardbred or like draft cross. Like, he. Oh. Nobody believes he's a thoroughbred because his mane is luscious.
should cut back, but give him the long Arab bath and really confuse them. Like, cut like a foot long bridal. Oh.
Yeah, right. I know, right? I'll put like a tattoo on his neck and rump, and then be like, "Look, he's got a brand and a brand and a tattoo."
Oh, yeah, he is all things.
And so I just, but I like it long because then in the summer I braid it because he sweats so much and his mane is so thick. Where Ferris, he doesn't sweat as well, so I just want to chop it off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I do with Manny. I just cut it, and then it just grows. It grows back more. It's disgusting. So I don't, you know, there are books about grooming, but I don't think there should be a mane book, and it goes through all the different mane styles, and it has photos. That'd be really pretty. I guess there are braiding books.
And what about, and braiding too. Like, you could do like how to braid, how to pull.
Yeah, there's all the different braiding specialties and stuff. Different disciplines.
Okay, well, Heather, you're a photographer. Natalie, you're a good groom.
Yeah.
I'm opinionated.
Is this our newest project? We still need to do a sticker project.
Yeah, oh, the stickers.
Yes. So yeah, this that's is the whole our thing. Second. We'll do stickers and then we'll do a main book.
The ultimate
like idea.
Mains.
Yeah.
The main thing.
The main equation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Main equation.
That'd be fun. It would be fun. Yes. And I have actually, so I did miss, and I had a little FOMO about the Kentucky 3-day. So what I have done, I've pulled out my Nikon, I've been taking photos of the barn, but I was looking through old photos that I used to take when I was submitting them and writing articles for the magazines. And my God, well, one, I'm out of practice. It's clear. Mm-hmm. But two, like, damn, I used to take a good photo. And so I felt like I at least was looking at pictures of eventing, even though I couldn't be at the actual event with you guys. So how was that? Seriously, though.
So inspirational.
You're gonna make me feel bad.
Goddamn. I felt, for me, writing eventing books, that place fills my cup. Like, I'm so inspired after I go to Kentucky, you know, and I love volunteering locally and I love going to local events, but we all know Kentucky is, you know, it's the Big Apple. It's the one. Mm-hmm. And everyone is so happy to be there. There's just, you just have such a vibe from the crowd. And I got to go and just hang out. And the start and finish are basically the same place, you know, and then there's like, there's a tent and a, you know, vet enclosure and stuff like that. So I went and hung out there for like an hour, watched riders finishing, watched their like untacking routine and how their crews greeted them and that kind of thing. I was there when the rider with Riptide finished the thoroughbred that everybody was talking about. I'm so sorry to your rider. I can't remember your name, but you're in very good company because I can't remember anybody's name. The minute they're like minorly famous, I don't know who they are. She was
Heather,
so
way,
happy when she came off. I don't know your name, Wallace something. She was so happy after that final fence. She just clapping her horse's neck, and I was just like, the tears just started for me instantly because I cried the whole time.
You were like watching history the whole time. You know?
I was just watching pure joy. You know, there wasn't even, and I didn't know who was finishing. I was just chilling out, you know, like not focusing really hard on who was who. And I saw a happy horse and a happy rider finish this tough track, and then, you know, her crew greeting her, her best friend greeting her, and it was just so beautiful. It's like, this is it. This is what I came here to see and to refresh myself with. So when I go back and sit at my computer, these are the things that I bring to people. Like, this is what eventing is truly about and why we are doing these things. So I'm thrilled to have gone. And then, of course, there's the other
piece. It sounds like it's changed your life. Like, you had an actual, like, existential experience.
That's what it's like every year. That's why after I went last year, I was like, I'm never missing this again. Because it's like, yeah, it's going to church. And it's where it's at.
Wow.
I feel so good.
What about you, Susan? And did you, like, pull anything, like, of that magnitude away? Is this your first year?
This is like my third year, okay. I think.
Oh, God, so you're like all
the
hot.
First, yeah. It was still Rolex when I went the first time.
I've heard of it.
We're like three sponsors deep at this point.
Yeah. Well, okay. Here's what I have to say about eventing. And this, I actually Now I don't remember this when I've been in Kentucky, but where I used to board was right across from Galway Downs in Southern California, which is a big eventing venue. And I remember watching, and like you can stand, for people who haven't been to something like this, you can stand so close to these immense, solid, terrifying jumps. And then you can really like see the expressions on the rider's face. You can hear them saying the encouraging things to the horse. And then when they land, the good boy and all, and it, and you know, the horse's breaths. And, you know, I like watching show jumping and I like watching horse racing and all those things, you know, in live, but it was really cool to me, you know, thinking about how I am so close to this action and I don't have that kind of moxie of a rider. So that will never be me. But in a way I can kind of experience just a glimpse of what that partnership is and just the thrill that that must be. And so it's such just a great, you know, there's nothing quite like that.
Yeah. I'm right with you, Susan. I think that's what I really like watching eventing. And I mean, yeah, I bring the camera, but like to feel the pounding of the hooves coming, and I would never ride that fast, that high, that anything. So it's kind of being, you know, vicariously kind of being experiencing that, which is really, really cool. So yeah,
I don't think you see that level of partnership
have it here
anywhere else either. Like,
no, I think you're right. 'Cause you really have to trust each other and know each other.
Yeah. There's never a moment where like if your horse and you are in outs on a track like that, then you're not going over the jump. It's just not happening. And somebody might end up, you know, dunked in the water. It's just, you have to have full faith.
And the other thing too, I was thinking a lot about and where I boarded in California, there was some very high level eventing trainers, and that I remember the owner of the farm was saying, oh yeah, those women are at the gym constantly. So they're riding multiple horses a day and they're doing other workouts in that. So I think the respect I have is not just for the partnership and, oh, they're good riders, but just really the athleticism and the training that goes in, you know, beyond the saddle too. Just that those very elite level, riders like that, they, you know, it's like any elite sport, like the NBA or, you know, Major League Baseball or something like that's just, it's impressive when people, can be that disciplined and, you know, just really go after that. And
I don't know what self-discipline looks like. I'm like the opposite of that. So it is impressive. It is impressive because I'm thinking of ways. It's 80 degrees here. I'm thinking of ways to skip out of my lesson tonight. So
I wish I had a lesson.
Have that in me.
Man. Yeah. It's inspirational to me. Like I know they're out there pounding, you know, in the morning, they're running, they're lifting weights, stuff like that. And I try to let that inspire me a little bit as well. I don't think I'm gonna ride 4-star, but you know, I'm young, anything could happen, so I'm ready and get in shape, and just in case it comes up.
Listen, if I can commit to just competing in like the adult IEA this year and stick with my guns and not, you know, hyperventilate from the exertion, like it's a win.
I just feel like when I watch them go by, I'm like, I miss galloping. And I turned to my husband after a horse went by. Mm-hmm. I said, I really miss galloping. Like, I really miss it. And he's like, calm down. So, yeah.
But it's nice. It gets you excited. It gets the juices flowing.
It really does.
Like, and I will say, and I've, you know, I've never been to Kentucky 3-day yet, but when I go to some of these horse events and I do see some of these clinicians or I see some of these riders and with the passion that they have, like it's hard not to walk away and have that same amount of passion and then just focus that on like the things that I'm good at, which is, you know, not riding, but you know, other things.
Yeah, pouring it into the books, you know, it's
right.
As we write about these equestrians, real or imagined, pouring all of that, all those vibes we get off of them just go straight into our characters. So it's all learning experience.
And that goes for fiction or nonfiction too, because with the nonfiction, right, even though you're writing true stories about real life things, you still have to put yourself in a position of being able to describe everything that goes around with it. So there's, yeah, it's really,
yeah,
it's pretty cool. Yeah.
What does that really come out like? Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm excited that I could get this wrong, but I think this is the third annual Buy a Horse Book Day, right?
Mm-hmm. Third.
I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. So for anybody who is listening to this now and is reading a horse book today, take a picture of your book, tag your author, you know, hashtag Buy a Horse Book Day, and tag Trafalgar Square Books, tag Heels Down Media, and you know, let's keep this thing going, because there is a huge community of authors that are writing books for you to consume and mm-hmm. read, and we're just getting started.
Absolutely. If you're writing one, keep working, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Get it out there. People want to read your book.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Well, and Susan, so speaking of, like, do you have any advice for anyone who maybe wants to write horse books?
Don't let anyone be the boss of you. You don't need a publisher, you know, because like I've been told different things from different publishers. But first, you know, I had a literary agent for a year, and they liked my book, Horses Adored and Men Endured, which is like a G-rated Bridget Jones Diary horse girl style. And they, you know, the feedback was good, that it was charming, it was fun, but that just they didn't have enough of an audience. This was a mainstream publisher, so it was too niche. But then, you know, I thought about it, and it's like, well, I know there's people out there like me who've been on a bunch of awkward dates and who also did awkward things at horse shows and got embarrassed, you know, just so, yeah. So if someone has a seed of an idea of wanting to write a book, just start writing. And the other thing is, when I've gone to events in the last few years, doing book signings and that, people have approached me and it's, you know, they tell me, oh, I have this one horse, and it's an incredible story, you know, kind of chicken soup for the soul type story about a horse, or maybe some fiction thing, and they want to write a book. And so I started hearing that so much, and I was like, okay, because people want advice, and I'm happy to give advice. But also, and I'm sure you guys get this too, like, it took me years to be able to do what I'm doing now with independently publishing my books. And so I'm happy to help someone, but also my background is in education. So I actually designed a course in January and had a lovely group of women come through who are all in the middle of writing a horse book of one kind or another. And it's called Aspiring Author Jumpstart. And so it was a 6-week online course with me there live. And I just, you know, like, these are the things you need to think about as you're writing. And it would be applicable to someone, you know, at the beginning of their journey. And maybe they don't know if they want to pitch, you know, try to get an agent and go the traditional route, or someone that maybe wants to just independently publish. So I said a lot there. But yeah, I think there's one of the things, Marguerite Henry, you know, got so much fan mail, and I read a lot of them when I was doing my research for Margaret, Misty, and Me, and people would tell her their ideas for stories. And it was mostly children, but occasionally adults would write her, and she was very empowering. She would write them back and just say, that sounds like a wonderful story, and I think you are the person to tell it. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't like in a, you know, smart alecky way of like, yeah, I don't want to do that, I'm busy, I'm Marguerite Henry, Newbery winner. You know, it was more like this, I hope you're the one that tells this story. So I think people should definitely write it down, because we need to understand mm-hmm. the mains. How long is my horse's mane? You guys are right.
Well, and I think that's important to say. So, you know, I was talking recently, we were seeing all these mainstream books with, you know, contemporary romance with hockey players or with baseball players, or I'm sorry, not everybody knows hockey or baseball, whatever. So why can't we bring horses to the mainstream? Because there's a lot of people who've never seen a horse that might want to read about them as part of a story. And the more of us that write down our experiences and our stories, the more people we will find to read them. So Just write the damn thing.
And if I could tag on to that too, I mean, think about the impact of Marguerite Henry. So I didn't come from a horse family, and she was my entry point. And that kind of got me going. And then I didn't give up. And I feel like, you know, if we want the industry to, you know, not shrink, and, you know, we've got the problem with land use and subdivisions and all of that kind of stuff, where as people may have had, you know, horses down the road and just, you know, it was a more rural-ish area. But allow me to get on my soapbox here. But what I'm trying to say is that, like, don't underestimate that your book with a horse in it could be appreciated and enjoyed by someone who is not an equestrian or someone who is pre-horse in their life. And it might be the thing that draws them in.
Yeah, that sparks that passion. About it.
And maybe
that is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've seen
emails
that.
About that. Yeah. And called. Really? Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people, that have come into horses through starting out with my books and then, you know, jumping into the whole like world. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to ruin your life like that. But aren't you glad you're here now with the crazies? Yeah.
Well, and, you know, that's something I get a lot with Confessions of a Timid Rider, like with the returning adult equestrians. I get people who rode as kids and who left and then came back because they felt, oh, well, she did it, so I could probably do it too if she makes it look fun. Yeah. So I think that is something that is really, you don't know your own power or your own, like, what you're going to reach in someone else's heart and soul. And it's humbling and inspiring for me as well. So I think, you know, whatever keeps you writing, but if someone has a story to tell, they should tell it. And books are just one way for them to reach people.
Very good point.
Amen.
I'm very fucking smart.
I'm
guys.
With you on that.
You know.
Well, we don't even know. Heather is like so smart.
Listen, I got to bring something to this table, okay? I can't just have, you know, chaos energy and all that fun stuff. But
empowering chaos, if you will.
Empowering chaos. Is that good? That's the name of my next book. Well, Susan, thank you so much for coming on again. Can you just go ahead, before we all head out, I mean, let them know where they can find you and your books. And again, for everybody out there, make sure you tag Buy a Horse Book Day. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. All right. Well, if they would like to take a look at my horse books, they can go to saddleseekshorse.com, and there's a little shop function there, and that'll take them over so they can see my Marguerite Henry biography, Marguerite, Misty, and Me. And is it okay if I give you guys a little announcement that I haven't told
you? Yes. Oh, yes, please. Ooh. Okay. Breaking news.
So I've been doing a lot of speaking since Marguerite, Misty, and Me came out, and one of the cool places I got to go was Shinkatiga Elementary School last fall. And so I was there giving my talk, and then one of the kids, this fourth and fifth grade, was like, I'd be interested to read your book. And I'm thinking, oh no, this isn't for kids. Not that it's adult content, you know, but just it's written at too sophisticated of a reading level for them. So I was like, oh my gosh, I need to have something for kids. And I want it to be something palatable for boys and girls, and something that's for, you know, kind of that pre-horse lover. So I have been working on a middle grade version of Marguerite, Misty, and Me, and I am going to be launching it this summer.
Oh my God, congratulations. Yeah,
such a good idea. Yay. That's so cool.
That is really awesome.
So saddleseekshorse.com. And then if they like looking at horse manes, they can come see my horse night over at on Instagram at saddleseekshorse, and also on Facebook.
Perfect.
Oh, and you know what else? I thought of one other thing.
What?
If they wanted to get, they could get a free sampler of like the first few chapters of each of my horse books. And I have four at this point at my website, and that'll get them on my email list, and they'll get a little free sampler of the four books, and they can check it out and see if they like it and go from there.
That's fun.
Pretty cool.
That's fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also I should shout out. So we're doing a May promotion. A lot of the horse book authors were doing kind of a newsletter swap. So if you sign up for one of our newsletters, Susan's mine. I don't think Natalie, because she didn't join it, but
I haven't checked my email in 2 weeks, but I'm going to.
Totally fine. But you're going to get, you can have access to a whole host of books this month that are being featured, and you can have the opportunity to download any of them for free.
Yeah, My Horses Adored and Men Endured, that like very
so cheeky
one.
And fun. Oh, it's cheeky. I like it.
Well, thank you. It's embarrassing. But it makes people laugh. Yeah, I wanted to unpublish it because I'm like, oh,
no.
Now, in hindsight, I think I divulged too much information. But then it's like, well,
I'm the queen of TMI. So like, you know, I think.
So that one, the ebook version is free during this
absolutely.
Month.
Absolutely. Awesome. And Back to Horse is free as well because I just released Shadow on the Mountain, which is the second book in the series. So, and then Natalie, you have a new book release as well.
I had The Makeover Horse come out a couple weeks ago. So that is the fifth book in the Ocala Horse Girl series. And it is about getting a horse ready for the makeover when your life is desperately in need of a makeover too.
Look at that. Yep. Sometimes life imitates art because my life needs a makeover right now. So
I'll send you a copy. Maybe it'll help.
Natalie says to do what? I thought this was fiction. But yes, exactly. All right. Well, you guys, so much fun. Everybody go buy a horse book and support your local authors this month, not just today, but this whole month and every month after, because we rely on you guys so much and we absolutely love hearing from you, and especially if you love our books.
If I could add one last thing, and I'm really bad about asking for things, but if you're listening and you've enjoyed one of Natalie's books or Heather's book or my book or any, you know, author really, and you haven't left a review.
Yeah, go leave.
Reviews are so helpful for us. We cherish them because it's just a way for us to kind of gain street cred and for our books to be able to, you know, be seen by more potential readers. So that would really be helpful. Thank you.
Please leave a review.
I'll say even a star rating is helpful. You can leave a star rating.
Yeah, you don't even have to leave a comment.
And it's nice because probably, I don't know about you guys, but every single book I release, somebody makes sure that they go through and leaves me a 1-star rating.
What is that? They're trolls.
So every single one of us gets trolled. And so actual like fans, it would be really cool if you could counteract some of that trolling because it looks bad.
It does look bad. And it actually hurts feelings. Like I try not to read reviews, but like I'm like, oh my God. And it makes me feel bad.
Well, the star rating one thing kind of amuses me because it's like, I know that's not a 1-star book. So a jerk did that. And that's funny to me that they made that.
And they can't even back it up, right? With words.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I know you did read it, and I know it's not a 1-star book. You can't hurt my feelings with that. However, when we enter our book in for, like, if I go to Barnes & Noble and I say, hey, can you drop my book into this promotion? They want to know what the star average is. And so if that average drops below a certain number, they're going to be like, oh, we can't include your book in this promotion. So it hurts in a financial way. So stars, we love them.
Yes. Lots of stars, please.
Yeah, really.
That's good notes.
See, I'm getting better about asking for things that I need.
Give Susan things. She needs them.
We all need them. We're poor. We write books.
We need things. We're needy.